Lovely to see you, Peggy. You look quite relaxed. We've spoken to a few Richmond supporters already this morning who seem to be anything but relaxed.
Well, when you have an important game, everybody gets excited about it. I hope it's excitement and not nerves.
I know, there's a lot of anxiety coursing through the veins of a lot of them, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you get to the point that this could be your last game of the season or you could go on, I think every team and all their supporters get very excited about that.
You know, Peggy, think of Richmond now, and the byword I think of is stability, both on and off the field. And it's, you know, people of my vintage would think that in itself is quite amazing because, you know, the last 30 years it's been a story of anything but. But on the field, they've played a very consistent style of footy. They've been one of the most consistent clubs all year. Off the field, yourself, Benny Gale, Damien Hardwick now into his, sixth season as coach. Richmond is a very stable footy club.
Well, we take that as a compliment.
Oh, it is.
Some people said that might equate with boring, but what you're talking about and that volatility is very much in the past. And we realize that our job as a board and as management and as coaching football is to make the best decisions you can, and you usually don't do that when you make them on short-term issues, and you don't do it when you make them very emotionally. So we're emotional about the game, but we try to think that the decisions we have to make in the long-term interest of the football club have to be made on a basis that any business would make decisions on.
So in those rare moments, say, for instance, when the focus has come on Damien Hardwick when the side's lost a few games, and it's been a while now, but have you had to sort of say at board level and to the executive, no, we're going to hold firm, or does it just come naturally now?
It just happens. We have a plan, and it takes time to see if that plan's going to happen. And so you don't say, oops, think the plan's wrong. You keep looking at what your plan is. And we had a plan to rebuild a football club. That takes a long time, and it takes patience. And sometimes patience is in short supply around football.
You can say that again.
So we've determined to be patient and to look at what we've put in place. And when you say we look like we're stable, take that as a compliment.
Peggy, due to what's happened the last couple of years, is this game more important than a knockout final?
No, I don't think so. No. I think it's another knockout final, but it's another game. And I think that when you're in finals 3 years in a row, you start to realize what finals are about. And our coach has always said, you got to give yourself a chance. You got to get in. And after a while, you get mature and you realize what it takes to win. And you understand the standard that's required. So I think that this has been serving an apprenticeship to get to that point.
So you feel they're better placed today than last year or the year before?
Definitely.
Mm. Oh, I was waiting for
anything. Oh, no, I thought, I thought I saw you.
That could be the first time you've ever been stuck for words.
Just looking at your beautiful
too.
Blue eyes, just wondering what was coming next.
Peggy, geez, we talk some drivel. One of the great assets that the club's always had is an incredible latent support base, if you like, which is a legacy of the late 60s and early 70s. Mm-hmm. And our joke used to be it was everyone who caught the Glen Waverley train lining from Jordanville and Mount Waverley. But they've been mobilised into active supporters and members of the club, haven't they? And that, I mean, you must be very proud of that membership figure.
Oh, membership is fantastic. And our supporters are fantastic. And when we hear that they're very fickle, as I say, well, they've been showing up for a very long time. And when you consider that we had the most people through the gate of any other club, and we haven't won anything yet, you think that there's more to come. But our membership department and Brendan's management team have worked so hard and done a really good job of finding those supporters, and they believe in what we're doing.
I don't know whether footy clubs do things like focus groups to find out how their supporters feel about things and try and touch. But I'm sure you get a lot of feedback voluntarily from them anyway without needing to ask for it. But
I do.
Do you know whether the football club has done that? Have you sought to find out from the supporter base and the members whether they'd like us to chart a course that you've already talked about and stay true to that course? Let it find its own feet and play itself out before we start making the sort of changes that Richmond has been renowned for making?
Well, there's an annual membership survey done of all the AFL clubs about how satisfied are we with membership. It's just not services and membership, but the football club and where it's going. And we have been by far the number one club in member satisfaction for the last 2 years for sure, maybe 3 years. So they're buying into what we're doing. I think our communication with members has been extraordinary over the last few years. So they understand how long it's going to take. Mm. And I think when we see the huge crowd here today, you'll see that that they think we're in the right direction.
And who are the key, I mean, you clearly are, but who are the key people at point in terms of selling the message? As far as you identify within the organisation, who are the key three or four people that we need to have right to keep those members satisfied and to push the message and the sell the vision that we want to sell at the Richmond Footy Club?
Well,
is it as simple? Is it the coach, the CEO? Is it that simple?
There are people who front the media, and you think, well, they're the ones who are selling in a public sort of space. But we have a huge staff that they're the one, the day-to-day contact with members, day-to-day to make sure that things are delivered as they're promised. So I think the whole club sells the club. Mm. But I think if you're looking at who people like to hear from and tell them what's going on and get a glimpse of what's going on, everybody likes to hear from the coach, everybody likes to hear from the captain, everybody likes to hear from our CEO. Well, and if things are going well, you don't hear from the president.
Do you think that it helps at a footy club, if you can get a CEO who's qualified, obviously qualified to do the job?
That's first thing, yes.
Absolutely. Much more so than the second half, which is the fact that he was a decorated player at the footy club. He was a much loved player at the football club. Is that a significant advantage in the AFL environment?
Oh, I think no doubt. And he had a bit of history as a lawyer and working in commercial world, and he did the AFLPA, so he knew the AFL quite well. Then the fact that he's someone who can bridge the gap between management and football in a very intelligent, and he's a great communicator.
Yeah, that's right.
So
yep.
I think that, and I was on the selection panel looking for the CEO at the time, and when Brendan was available, we thought we got to talk to him.
Hmm.
So I agree that having someone like Brendan be the face of the football club and be able to talk, I think members listen when you have the authority of having been a player as well as being in management.
I want to ask you a big picture one, because we've seen and continue to see a lot of issues beyond the playing field bob up in a football context. Now, the Adam Goods thing flared up again yesterday. There's been an ongoing thing about homophobia and campaigns against that. And I'm a big supporter of clubs being active in these sorts of issues, but I know a lot of footy fans don't like it. They think it's sort of exceeding their station. Now, I know Richmond's had some really good work with Indigenous communities, and there's an academy of sorts set up there. What's your stance personally on to what extent football clubs should be involved in social issues?
Well, I think that football has a platform in which it can do a lot of social good, but make no mistake about it, the number one thing we want is a successful football club. But there's a lot of other things that can go on at the same time. It's not either or, it's you can do both. And we have made a commitment to the Indigenous community through our Korangamiji Institute, which you were talking about,
yeah,
which is about leadership and professional or employment training for young Indigenous people. And so I think that our commitment goes beyond just saying things, as we have people, we've had 6,000 young Indigenous people come through the club and get this training and this leadership training. So it's not about football with that, but it's a very powerful tool. And you find that football, as you know, people listen to sports people when they don't listen to anyone else. So there's, if you can deliver a good message, it penetrates through to people in a way that you don't hear from politicians, you don't hear from church leaders, but sports people in this country have the ear of the population.
Do you think you get anything out of it at all in terms of...
Oh, we get a great deal out
of
it. We like to think that we have an organization that stands for something. We like to think that playing great football and ultimately winning a premiership gives us a platform to make these important statements. So we think it makes us a better... You need to be a sustainable football club, and you need to be relevant to the community. You can't be apart from the community. You have to realize the issues. And our young players are dealing with lots of the same issues that come through. So I think that it makes us all a bit better for working there and makes the club a better place.
Peggy, not dealing with the Luke Hodge issue last week specifically, but more broadly, certain sections, I think, a lot of the public think the club should suspend him, and the others think no. What's your philosophy behind that? And are we wrong to suggest that clubs should be penalising players beyond what the law says? Is it the law's responsibility, or do clubs also have a responsibility to penalise players?
Well, I think that clubs can set their own standards, and Hawthorne's been a great club for a long time, so whatever they've done...
Yeah, well,
I think
not
is
so
them.
Much
yeah.
They're entitled, just more broadly.
And our board has thought about this in advance of anything happening, some years ago, about what would we do and who would make the initial decisions. And we've decided that, you know, Brendan, in the first instance with whoever's involved, will look at it, and if something needs to be escalated to the board, it will. But we think people who are on the ground, who have day-to-day contact with those people, know what should be done and know that the appropriate response to whatever happens. It's hard to make a hard and fast rule unless you know the circumstances. And I think everyone would think, well, the circumstances need to count. So we don't have a hard and fast rule. The board hasn't imposed one, but football can develop its own rules around that in conjunction with Brendan.
Where do you and the footy club sit on the three strikes? And there's going to be a change to the AFL drug policy. Would you like to be informed as a club sooner rather than later if you've got a player who's transgressing?
Well, I think that most clubs would like to know sooner rather than later. It doesn't mean the whole club needs to know, but some responsible people need to know, because I think most clubs now are set up to handle those things in a way that they might not have been in the past, and that we can offer assistance in a way that doesn't require them to go off-site, that if other people know, they can sort of be looking out for them and help. So what we're looking at is it's additional avenue of assistance, and if we can provide that, but I don't think it needs to be made public sense. But I think the club would need to know, because it could prevent something
more serious
happening. Yes, exactly.
Because that's been the fear, hasn't it, that footy clubs would be punitive in some way, that they would use it against the player. But I feel like football clubs understand the culture that exists out there in society nowadays, and these guys are reflective of that to a degree. And they footy clubs are more accepting of the responsibility that comes their way. They're not likely to throw a bloke out. And
The other element to this is the media. Here I am bagging my own again, but I think the media has been a bit disingenuous about its stance on it, and saying that, you know, we think that should happen too. But I wonder whether the media has more self-interest in terms of
course,
we just want to know the names.
Yeah, and I think that you have to prevent the what's the gossip about, as opposed to generally helping someone. So it may be that some clubs don't have the resources to do that, and you wouldn't want to have the rule come in without appropriate resources at every club to handle those sorts of situations. But I think most clubs now are in a position to really assist with that sort of problem.
Can I just ask you one too about the priority pick and compensation picks? Because I think there's a perception out there in the footy world that the AFL are wheelers and dealers. And I think that the more decisions that go in-house and aren't sort of obviously transparent, the more suspicion there is. And I've been quite critical of their decision to not abandon the priority pick, but take it in-house and make it discretionary, because we now don't have the perception of sides tanking for it, but instead we have an annual begging bowl where the sides go out and make an arbitrary claim for a priority pick. What's your feeling about that?
Well, we haven't requested a priority pick.
No, so, to your credit.
Yeah, and we never have. No. And you must say that sometimes you think, well, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that we've had to do that. But that's the AFL's business. I'm a great believer in transparency, and I know Brendan talked about this during the week with KB, is why can't we know? Why can't we know?
Last one before we let you go. How big an asset, it's clearly a big one because you've invested a lot of money in it, but the asset that you have at Punt Road, I mean, I live just up Hoddle Street from, I drive past it a lot, and I think this is just a great advertisement for the Richmond Football Club. Is it? And it's a beautiful old place. It's an historic part of, you know, the old VFL culture. Is it much loved still amongst the modern Richmond executive?
Oh, you bet. You bet. We know how lucky we are to still have Punt Road. And whenever I hear that they're going to widen Punt Road itself again, I go, oh, what's going to happen to the Oval? But no, it's still our heartland. It's still where people want to come. The few years that we had to move our family day out, it was like, oh, no, shock horror. No, we love Punt Road. We are a bit landlocked, and we need to expand some. So we'll be looking at some facilities planning right now about how we can best use what remains of Punt Road.
There are certain elements of it I'm sure the club's glad they haven't hung on to, like the dead possums falling out of the roof.
One or two things, you know.
we bronze them. We put them in the museum. So,
Terry Wallace has given the big thumbs up that those possums no longer exist.
Has playing VFL there been significantly beneficial for the club?
Oh it has. And the VFL's been great about scheduling VFL sides there when we're going to play the senior sides here. And so our fans have really loved being able to see VFL football and then walk across to the MCG.
You're blessed.
And to see that ground used again, it's the proper size and the ground is fantastic. And so we love being able to see it play football as well as a training ground.
Peggy, good luck today.
Thank you.
To you and yours. Thanks for coming in for a chat.
Thank you very much.